This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
New week and another podcast for you. Jeff Patterson of TSN 1040. I'm in New York. Botch back in Vancouver. But again, the magic of technology, we'll get this thing sorted out and we will deliver the goods as we usually do. The podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express and your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or visit them online, eagleridgegm.com. Now, Botch, I said you're back in Vancouver, but I got to ask, like, what are you doing there? Get on a plane, round up some fans, some friends, and get to New York to see the Flow do his thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind gathering together some of us Flow riders and getting over there. It's been pretty exciting, obviously, in Vancouver. And it's funny, like, you look, like, they're playing the Devils next, for instance, right? Like, the Devils have, like, three top rookies in their lineup, like Hashir, Brat, Will Butcher. They're all among their top four in points leaders. Like, if that was the scene in Vancouver, I can't even imagine how bananas the city was going. Like, right now we just have one rookie who's playing great and the city is besser bonkers. It's all anyone wants to talk about, and with good reason. I mean, there is no question he's been delivering the goods. And part of what comes with that, unfortunately for you, is when a player is this young, a rookie, and playing this well, leading all rookies in points and goals, and I would suggest now the front runner in the Calder race, there's a tradition in Vancouver that we fight, that we argue over the nickname. So everyone's putting their chips on the table. And I just want to come, like, one of the reasons, like, it's really hard for me to put together the Provies every night. It's like, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of writing, and I need shorthand to do it. And that's one of the reasons that I lean on nicknames like BFG and the Flow. It's just easier for me than constantly saying Brock Besser, Besser this, Besser that. So that's why I tend to lean on those nicknames. And I did promise, like, when I was using it a lot earlier in the year, that if Besser ever hit the mainstream as the Flow, I would no longer use it as a nickname. It has hit the mainstream, J-Pat, I'm here to tell you. And unfortunately for you, I know you hate nicknames. It must be driving you crazy. Because I turned 650 on this morning. They were arguing over whether it should be the Brock Star. People were saying it should just be the Brock. Like, it was ridiculous what people are going through. Like, an iMac wrote a poem, which included, like, multiple nicknames in it. So I can only imagine what's going on for you, a guy who nicknames, it drives you crazy to hear these.
Right, but I'm of mixed minds here because with all this attention, like, and we're in New York City now, like, the attention of North America is on Brock Besser. At least it kind of feels that way. It's taken the focus off finding a name for that stupid line, like the entire line. And so, you know, again, there's some positives here because nobody's talking about, you know, whatever the bus line and I don't know the bus system very well, but there's bus lines and stuff. No, like, just forget it. Like, they're the top line. Like, that's no longer in doubt. That's all anybody that watches or follows the Canucks need to know. That's the top line. Just end of sentence, period, amen. Like, just let it go. And if you've got to focus your attention now on a nickname for Brock Besser, and look, we kind of peeked out last night when Bob McKenzie responded to your tweet and then doubled back and, like, did some Photoshop himself, I think. Like, I don't know who did it, but, like, he upped the ante. And, forget if people didn't see the, you know, pat on the back, and then he put the J in front. So how many times do we talk about the power of the Provies? To me, that was next level. Like, as good as Brock Besser has been the last couple of nights, Bob McKenzie came in over the top on him.
Right. McKenzie may have had the best night out of anyone last night with that. That came literally out of nowhere. It was amazing to see. And of course, He was responding to what's going on here on the Canucks power play, and it's been a big topic for me and you and others, and even one of Travis Green's famous laughing attacks came when I was trying to ask him, like weeks ago, why wasn't Besser in the Ovechkin spot? And it became an ongoing thing that none of us could understand. And then the night of the bait and switch happened, right before that LA game, all of a sudden Besser appears in the Ovechkin spot. And since then, the power play has got 7 goals in 15 attempts. And I'm telling you, it is the greatest feeling for a lot. It wasn't just me or you. Like, there was a lot of people collectively involved in shouting, put Besser in the spot. You saw the reaction when we, even in a practice, we saw Besser in that spot. So there are thousands of people out there who all needed back padding machines, because it's been like none of us, we all expected, you know, this will help the power play. None of us expected to get the dividends, to win the lottery this soon, this fast, but it's happening. And you saw it last night with the goal that that Besser scored with a Ovechkin-like, dare I say, Ovechkin-like shot when Alex Edler finally did pass to him. So, yeah, I think it's great that McKenzie's making note. To me, that was a bouquet for all of us. For all of us who have been out there saying, put that man in that spot, McKenzie came out with the biggest back pat that any of us could ever hope for. And he said, you know what, guys? You were all effing right. And J-Pat, we were.
Couple things. I just want to backtrack just to finish up on nicknames first. And look, I get the irony, Botch. Like, here I am sort of railing against nicknames when I've been dubbed J-Pat, and that's it. And I had a guy at the practice rink in Philadelphia. They're at the University of Pennsylvania. You know, this little practice rink, you've probably been in it. The Canucks skate. I'm going down to do some interviews. And, like, there's one guy. I thought he was a rink attendant. I didn't. All of a sudden, J-Pat! And he's a Vancouver guy who's going to school there. And he wanted to talk about the Canucks. So you never know when you're going to run into people screaming your name like that. But I get it. I still don't like the idea of nicknames for hockey lines. And to me, a nickname is something like the teammates, the players themselves have to use. So, like, to me, nobody called Pavel Bure the Russian Rocket. Like, his teammate, hey, Russian Rocket. Like, it just didn't happen. You know, Kevin BX's Juice, I get that. Like, that to me is a pretty decent nickname, because that's what his teammates call him. So there are labels, and then there are nicknames. And I think too many people get too hung up on labels. If it's a nickname, I want the players, the teammates, the guys in that room, I want them to use it. As for the power play, and I like to crunch the odd number here and there. I haven't done this. But this past week feels like the Canucks have been more productive in the past week than they have been in the last 2 years. I don't think those numbers quite bear out that way, but it just feels that way. And you got a taste of it at the home games, but man, I'm telling you right now, like, I haven't seen this group roll out over the boards with the man advantage, you know, confident. Like, there's a sense right now, like, somehow they're going to score. Like, it hasn't always looked pretty, but they've found a way to score with the power play, and who knows how long they can keep it up, but absolutely a huge part of the back-to-back wins here to start this road trip, the win in Los Angeles as well. And after 2 years of all of us just kind of being driven into the dirt watching the power play, got to admit, it's kind of fun to see a power play that's actually productive right now.
Yeah, and I think that we all have to ask ourselves, would it be productive if Besser wasn't in the spot? And I think that it's been a game changer. You know, I heard, I was listening, you sent me yesterday's talk with Travis Green, and you laid that question on him about the D-keeper, and he went on about Pouliot. One of the things he talked about there was how confidence has made a difference in Pouliot, and I'm telling you, like, Besser's success on that power play has given everyone, both units, a level of confidence that I don't think that I've seen. Like, this is just, like, reading it off the ice and seeing off the ice. I don't think that I've seen that level of confidence from that group in a while. But the other thing, I think, like, you know, Besser to me, number one, that's the biggest impact. The other thing, though, that I thought was interesting from that take, and I wrote about this, and I included it in the Provies, was the answer to a question you asked about Erickson. And Green was Green basically said, he essentially said, look, I think that Erickson was being too passive. He wasn't getting, he wasn't being aggressive enough. He wasn't carrying the puck. He wasn't getting, you know, in on the net to the so-called dirty areas. That's what I read between the lines when he said he had to sit down with Erickson, and there were certain things that Erickson had to do. Now I'm wondering, because I did text you last night, like, you've got to talk to get Erickson's side of this. Have you talked to Erickson yet? And did he give any explanation or any further? Did he allow us a window into what these conversations were all about with Travis Green?
I did. I talked to him last night post game. It was kind of funny. They opened the room. I go in there. Pouliot's just swarmed by the local media. Like, they couldn't get enough of Derek Pouliot. And I think it overwhelmed him because he's a pretty low key guy. And, you know, I've had a couple of talks with him, but I've never seen that kind of scrum around Derek Pouliot, who got the welcome back on the Jumbotron treatment, which really kind of freaked me out. Like, he only played 50 some odd games in Pittsburgh, and it was like spread out over 3 or 4 years. So I don't know. I saw that and I'm like, am I seeing this? He's really getting the welcome back. And he kind of looked sheepish on the bench, put his hand up, and there was a smattering of applause. But anyway, so that was kind of part of his night, and then the goal, and then just this crush. So I go in and I have a decision to make. I got Erickson over to my right. I got the flow, and you know that people are going to attack him post-game. And then you got Pouliot. And so I went Besser first, and then I went to Pouliot. And out of the corner of my eye, as I'm in the Pouliot scrum, I see Erickson is talking to Kuz. And this isn't good because I'm going to want Louis Erickson. And I'm sure that Kuz was going down that road because he was in the thing with Green before the game. Anyways, sure enough, Erickson escapes, and I had to put in a request with the media relations staff. Can you go, like I said, day off tomorrow? You know, can I get Louis Erickson? And so they found Louis Erickson before he like hopped in the shower and stuff. They bring him back out, and he just kind of had this look of resignation. Like, really? Like, I have to do this again? Cause as we know, like, he's gone long stretches where nobody's seen him or heard from him. And he kind of this look like, dude, you've just scored in back-to-back games. Like, this is going to be painless. Trust me. Like, this is a good news interview. You've just won and you've scored a goal. I want to talk to you. But he had this look of like, oh no, not again. Anyways, we talked about the game, and then I did, you know, I ran the Green stuff past him, and he admitted that, yeah, like, maybe he had been a little, you know, let's be honest, you know, Green called him soft, essentially, without using that word. But Travis Green called him soft and said that they've had a couple of talks. And who hasn't Travis Green had a couple of talks with, by the way? Like, every time I go around that room, like, it's not just one. Like, guys have had these, like, long, drawn out, I don't know. Like, I'm now envisioning him, like, these two chairs in his office. Come on in, you know, sit down, maybe some sort of lunch service, whatever the case. Anyways, Louis Erickson admitted that, you know, he said, oh, you know, I've always kind of been the trusted guy on my line, and, you know, defense first. And, you know, from there, the offense kind of flows, and, you know, maybe I'm being more aggressive now. Whatever the case, the guy's been pretty damn good in his return to the lineup from the knee injury. So I keep coming back to this. Like, imagine, like, try and wrap your head around the fact, like, he could be a productive member of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm still having, like, difficulty coming to terms with what that will actually look like over the long haul. But in his return here, since he got back in San Jose, he's been damn good for the Canucks.
Yeah, Green's talks are gaining this kind of mythical power in locally, because you know, and this is a point that I've made here and I've written about I was on this, J-Pat, like, right to the start of the season, that in the summer the Canucks did not believe that Besser was going to be on this team. That I think, in fact, I even talked about this at the beginning of the summer, that the plan was that Besser was going to start the year in Utica, and the hope was that by the midpoint of the season, he'd be ready to play NHL games. Now, Green has since, you saw you were there when I first asked him, you know, kind of went down this narrative and said, like, what did you really think about Besser in the summer? And he said, well, I sat down with Besser. We had a lot of hard talks, and he seemed to suggest that that had made an impact. And since then, it's got these mythical qualities that I see it written about, that the talk with Besser changed everything. And, you know, I'm sure it made I'm sure the talks had an impact, right? Like maybe small percentage points, but let's be real. Like Brock Besser was really good last year in the 9 games he played, when he scored 4 goals, when he came right out of college. So like to say that Besser wasn't ready until he talked to Green is a bit of a reach. Like he was ready to play in the NHL last year. In fact, he was making a difference. He was making Bo Horvat better at the end of last year, stepping right out of college. So I don't think that, I mean, he has exceeded all expectations here, but I think it was a misstep by the Canucks to kind of go down the road, he's not ready. But ultimately, I worry that no one's going to pay attention to that, and they're all going to say, like, Green's talk made all the difference. And now Green's talk, I can't deny it, like, Erickson does look different now than he did at the start of the year, and I'm starting to wonder, like, do I want to talk? Like, how much better could I be if I sat down with Travis Green and we went over a Provis step by step? Because we did find out recently that him or someone in that staff reads the Provis, because I had a whole entire section about Jake Virtanen one day, and you asked about it the next day, and all of a sudden Green's quoting stats that were in the Provis. So I do wonder, like, maybe if you are reading them, Travis, maybe sit down with me and have a meeting where I can improve.
Right, but, and I don't want to debunk it entirely, because I do think there is something to both Besser and Louis Erickson, but Botch, why the hell then hasn't he had a sit down with Eric Goodbranson?
Right. I think the Sedins, you know, maybe Daniel Sedin, those guys are on pace for, what, 30 points? And no one deserves a sit down on the team more probably than Goodbranson. I actually got, I should read this to you. I got a text last night from someone, hold on, let me dig this up, that, you know, is involved in the NHL quite heavily. And they were watching Goodbranson last night. And let's face it, it was not a good Goodbranson game at all. And a bad time, because we do believe, this is the text I got. It's actually astounding how bad he is. Off the glass, high flip, hard rim. That's him. I would never re-sign him. And I think that a lot of people around the league are noticing this. I took it when Green answered your Pouliot question, really good answer too about Pouliot, and he said, like, this is the kind of guy that we need. We don't need guys who, it's just crazy trying to get the puck out of their own end. It seemed to me he was describing Goodbranson, and if you watched that game last night, there was one play where the puck ended up right on Goodbranson's stick, like in the defensive zone. He's right in front of Nilsson. He loses it out of nowhere. Besser sweeps in. Like, he's such a good defensive player, and everyone talks about the goals, but defensively, like, he's a witch defensively too. Like, he's been almost magical lately. I'm thinking, like, is that another defensive? Like, there were several times I've watched a play and thought, okay, that's the other defensive pairing. Nope, that's Brock Besser, and he sweeps in and he grabs the puck and he saves Goodbranson. He curls around, brings the puck to safety, and then he knocks it back to Goodbranson. So as the puck, he's open. What does Goodbranson do? Off the boards and right to a Penguin. It led directly to another scoring chance against. Goodbranson has not looked good, J-Pat, not at all.
And so I floated this on Twitter last night, and I was half serious. And, you know, that's about as far as I'll go on it. But look, the first game back from this road trip is that 4 o'clock start against Toronto that we always hear about. First game back off the road trip. Who knows what Besser does from here on out? But he's done enough already on this road trip. Like, if I'm the Canucks, and I know Travis Green has done everything in his power to slow this roll, and it's almost funny now because, we ask him about slowing the roll, and then Besser goes out and scores 2. And then we ask him again, and Besser scores 2 more. But, like, if you're the organization, have some fun with this. Like, honest, don't put scarves or programs. I said it last night. Put blonde wigs on the seats in the, like, can you imagine Rogers Arena, a nationally televised, the early game, hockey night in Canada. You want Friedman to come around. How about 18,000 people wearing blonde wigs to see if Besser's up to, like, 20 goals by the time he comes off this road trip?
Yeah, you know, and like, I am so into hyping this because we've had so few things over the past number of years that we can sit there and hype up. And I wrote a piece last night about Ebner, who's like off the Canucks beat now. And I kind of in my head was revisiting the kind of Ebner glory days and the best last times that I remember when the Canucks were in that playoff series and against the Calgary Flames, and him, among us, were asking Willie these really tough, because his deployment was so crazy in that playoff series. Like, he was so badly getting out coached, and he just looked at deer in the headlights, taking like these like really tough, fielding these impossibly tough questions from guys like Ebner. And then I started thinking, man, that playoff series feels like a decade ago. Like, it's so long, been so long since we've had something to rally around in this hockey market, had something to be excited about in this hockey market. So I say, like, don't slow the roll. And I'm not sure, and I'd be interested to hear, like, how is Travis Green responding to the Besser questions? I say, don't slow the roll. Yeah, bring the wigs. Let's get going. Let's overturn Elliot Friedman. Let's show him that what Besser is doing right now is the projections I saw, they were going to be worse than the Coyotes, that the Coyotes had the better roster. Keller is doing nothing to improve that team. Besser is taking a power play that's been terrible for 5 years, and he has breathed life into it. He has given something for us to be excited about. I'm all in on all of that. Blonde wigs, whatever it takes, the float t-shirts. I bought mine last night. Like, I am all in on the Brock Besser hype machine, and let's ride it as long as we can, because it's been so bleak out there in terms of things that are good news stories, positive news stories, great news stories for this hockey club.
Well, I got to tell you, in Philadelphia to start the trip, like, I watched the game. I mean, in awe, the first goal down the right side just blows it past the goalie. I heard Ray on the radio saying, like, you know, nobody scores that goal from his strong side across the goalie off the bar and in. Like, it really was something. And then the second one, Daniel, the little saucer. And again, like, there was just no doubt when he was in that shooting position. So there's his two goals on Tuesday night. And like, I was so locked in on everything he was doing, and he had some chances to get the hat trick then. Same thing kind of played out last night. But I walked out of the game in Philadelphia and I was like, damn, Nolan Patrick was playing in that game. Like, I'm convinced that Nolan Patrick, I had to look at the stat sheet though. I didn't notice Nolan Patrick, second overall pick, once, like, he was in the game, he took a regular shift, I didn't notice him. I walked out of the game last night, and Sidney Crosby's obviously a slightly different story, but, like, I didn't notice Crosby much last night, even though he had 10 shot attempts. Again, like, I was just, you know, drowning in, I can't get enough of this Brock Besser thing. So when you, right off the hop here today, you roll out all these rookies that the New Jersey Devils have that are powering the New Jersey Devils, that are, you know, turning the narrative about the New Jersey Devils, and that's not easy to do after the last couple of decades. And I don't care. Like, I don't care that Nico Hischier, the first overall pick, is playing tomorrow night. Like, I don't. And I'm just like, what's Besser going to do next?
Yeah, and that is part of that, is because we've been so starved for a sniper. Like, how long has it been since the Canucks have had a true one-shot scorer that's young, right? Like, Verbata, yeah, he could do it for a while, but... You know, it's been since, like, you know, what, Ryan Kessler's heyday, since there was a guy who had the puck in the middle of the slot, and you thought, okay, like, this guy can pick one of these corners and score on one of these goalies. And I'll tell you what, like, Brock Besser just is Matt Murray's daddy. Like, I cannot believe what I was hearing from Matt. Like, I didn't hear back to hat trick night. It was like maybe a day later that I was in the press room. I think you were there, and I was, you know, someone said, you got to hear what Murray said about all of the Besser goals. And I went back and I got the Murray audio, and he went through everyone. Someone's actually taken his audio from that, played like basically sad trombone music to go along with it. He took every one of Besser's goal and tried to explain how lucky Brock was. And I thought, like, watching last night, okay, there's no way that Matt Murray can do it. Like, I'm thinking, there's no way he can do it again. Like, these goals are sublime. Like, these goals are just gorgeous goals. Like, everything that we hoped for and lacked in Vancouver for maybe forever. Like, I can remember, even though in those three straight series against the Chicago Blackhawks, like, the Hawks had all these guys, like Kane and Hossa, who, if you gave them the open, in the middle of the ice,
your thought, oh shit, they're going to snipe one past Roberto Luongo. And the Canucks really, you know, despite Kessler, they didn't really have anyone even then who could score goals like this. So I thought, okay, Murray's going to concede here. He's going to admit that Brock Besser is something, that Brock Besser is a great shooter, and he's going to concede defeat. And of course, he pulled an Andrew Walker. He would not take the L whatsoever. And again, he went through all the goals and said, like, he was Mike Weir and said, like, no, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, these are total fluke goals. And to that I say, Matt Murray, Brock Besser is now your father.
Yeah, I too was shocked by all of that. Like, the hat trick game, whatever. Like, I was nuts so then, but to back it up when the guy's got 5 of his 11 goals on the season on you, Matt Murray, sorry, that's not luck. And, you know, I was joking post-game last night, like, when he's talking about, yeah, this was lucky and that was lucky. I was, you know what was lucky? He's lucky he didn't kill you with that one timer. Like, literally kill you the way that he shot the puck. Like, we have been waiting for that shot, and he's been set up a couple of times and fanned on it, or maybe didn't get everything. Man, he got everything on that one last night. PatCast is a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. Tomorrow's Black Friday. November is Black Friday month at Eagle Ridge GM. Up to $14,000 in discounts. Get huge savings on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com for full details. You mentioned Fast Abbey, and I just want to take a sec because you wrote about it, and I fully applauded, and I got a couple of good laughs out of a few of those stories. I don't feel like our listeners truly understand or even really know Dave Ebner, because, like, as we said, like, he kind of would drop in from time to time. He would get out there and write some, you know, unbelievable stories about, I won't call them fringe sports, but, you know, sports that don't necessarily get the attention that some do. And then he would drop in and write a, you know, a Canuck story as well. And he always came with a great angle, as you pointed out. My first memory of Fast Abbey, and it was one of my favorites too, because he had this unique style. And again, if people don't fully know him, he could be pretty disarming, but he could also be kind of awkward, right, in the way that he did his thing. And the very first day, like, I didn't even know who he was. And there was a big Kevin Bieksa scrum and a bunch of questions, you know, sort of the usual stuff. And then out of nowhere, from Bieksa's left, Fast Abbey comes with, you know, a pretty good question, as I recall. And Bieksa just did the slow turn to his left and gave him, like, this dirty look and then said, who are you? And Ebby didn't skip a beat. He introduced himself, and then he repeated his question, and Bieksa answered it, and he got a great answer out of it. It was so good, and there was so much of that. Like, I don't think anybody, including the players, really knew who Dave Ebner was, but he's a fun guy, good guy to be around, and I'm sure he'll do a terrific job as he moves on to the business section of the Globe. But we will miss him because, again, so many of us kind of come from the same angle on stories, and he always had his unique spin, and he produced some great, great answers.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things, like, even when I found out about this, one of my first thoughts was, like, when I look down Press Row now, like, I like that there's this whole blossoming new guys on the beat, right? Like, I like Bulis is on the beat, JD's around, and Beecher's doing his thing. But, you know, the one part that those guys have yet to be able to master, Bulis did great on his, was almost Ebner-like, on that first day of training camp when he kind of exploded out of the gate. But, you know, part of the job is interrogation. Like, part of the job is question and answer. And you can't be intimidated by the people you're asking the questions to. Ebner was never intimidated. Like, he could not care less what you thought about his questions. And they were often biting. They were often on point. Almost always on point, and they were often very difficult questions to ask. I ask those type of questions, and I kind of wince inside. There was no wince. That guy has zero wince factor. Like, he would lob them out again and again and again. And you're right. He would extract great answers from the people that he was asking the question, whether it was Lyndon or Benning or some of the players. And I talked about the Brandon Sutter one, when he just approached, you know, the Canucks sort of celebrating this big win against the Coyotes, and he essentially went up to Sutter and said, yeah, you just beat the worst team in hockey, Brandon. How do you feel about that? And I'll never forget seeing Sutter's face on that question. Right now, we don't really have guys who are going to step up and take that role, and I hope And I do hope that a lot of these new guys step in. Like, Gradin was going on about, I wanted you know, Pettersson in the Canucks lineup this year so we could learn from the team. I wanted Ebner on the beat this year every day so these guys can see how the fuck he asks those questions and see how he doesn't care and see how important it is when we're out there trying to get great answers, because it ain't easy.
The funny thing for me with him, too, is, and we're talking like he's dead. He's just moved on to the business section at the Globe, but he's dead to us now in the hockey media. But for a guy that really didn't care about the day-to-day minutiae the way that, you know, it consumes us, and yet I was in a hockey pool with him, a media hockey pool a couple seasons ago, and like he couldn't, like the way I talked about Besser earlier, like he couldn't, he would give me daily updates via email about his hockey pool team. And I just thought it was hysterical because this is a guy that didn't give an F about, you know, the players themselves in the games. But when they were on his hockey pool team, like he was living and dying with this damn hockey pool. And I didn't really care about the hockey pool. Like I don't get charged about hockey pools. But I was in this one because it was a bunch of media guys, and I thought, okay, you know, have some fun with it. But man, that he loved his hockey pool. It was hilarious.
and it is almost like an obit here, but I will miss him. I do hope that if there are some of those blog guys listening and some of the new guys listening, that they arm themselves with great questions, because we need help, J-Pat. You know, there's difficult scrums out there. There are difficult nights when we're going to be, you know, questioning, interrogating Travis Green. Besser's not going to score two goals. It's not going to be all glorious every night. Like, Besser's not going to score these two goals a night. He's great when he does. But how has Green been kind of slow? You talk about him trying to slow the roll. Like, how has, on this trip, how does he respond to the, you know, Besser is gone? Because I will point out that I've noticed a difference in the way that the players are answering these questions. Because right from the start of the year, in that preseason game in LA, when Besser sniped the goal through a guy's legs, sweeping to his left, and he hit the corner that was the long furthest away from him. It was an incredible goal. You saw Vertanen reacting to that. Since then, I've been asking players, like, what do you think about Besser's shot? And then mostly I've noticed it went from, the Vanek, to, holy shit, like Henrik Sedin last night seemed to say that's one of the purest finishers I've ever seen. Like, have you noticed, like, a difference in the way that players are answering questions about Brock Besser?
Yeah, and I think, you know, early on, you know, they're teammates, they're happy he's scoring, but they're kind of shrugging it off like, yeah, it's, yeah, good for him kind of thing. There's nowhere to hide. Like, you can't ignore it. It's, you know, forget elephant in the room, like whatever bigger than that. Like, it's just, it is the story right now every night. The guy scored in four straight, six goals in that time, back-to-back two-goal game. So, you know, of course it's becoming a story. And, you know, Daniel was asked about it after the game in Philly, and he said, you know, Marcus and Kessler and now Besser. He said the three best finishers that he's played with. Like, this guy's played, what, 27, 28 games in the NHL, and Daniel Sedin played 1,200, and he's putting Besser already in that category with Marcus Naslund and Ryan Kessler. Last night, Brandon Sutter, you know, he was joking about it. And again, pretty light mood. You can imagine why after wins. But Brandon Sutter was asked about it, and Sutter said, yeah, like, I don't think he's missed a shot in 2 weeks now. So I think they are embracing this. Obviously, they realize that, hey, it's good for Brock, but it's damn good for the hockey team too. And so this guy is driving their bus right now. And why wouldn't they want to have some success? And, you know, of course they're going to get asked about it because the guy's doing things, as we've pointed out, that just haven't been done in these parts in an awfully long time. As for Travis Green, and it's interesting that, you know, it's different with Willie, where Willie DeJardin was available game day skates and post game. You know, the Canucks aren't doing a lot with the game day skates. They didn't have one in Philadelphia. Green was nowhere to be seen during the day. So they make him available just before game time. And they did it again because it was back-to-back in Pittsburgh. So his media availabilities have been limited. And, you know, just before a game yesterday in Pittsburgh, for example, you know, I'm asking him about Louis Erickson. I'm asking him about Thomas Vanek as a playmaker as opposed to a goal scorer. And Green's giving me great answers. But then Erickson scores a goal, and Vanek sets up two, and then, like, you know, 3 hours later, post-game, I'm going, and I have to ask the same question. Like, it's a weird dynamic right now because I want the answers for the post-game show, so I want him to verbalize them, but I've just asked him these same questions, and I think he's kind of on to me, so I hope he understands the dance that we're doing here. But you would have loved this one yesterday, because every day he gets asked about Tanev, right? And Tanev's on the trip, and they had the practice in Philly the other day. And so Kuz says yesterday, well, he asked him before the Philadelphia game, you know, what about Tanev? Is there an update? And Green said, nah, he's closer, but he's not going to play tonight. So then last night in Pittsburgh, Kuz says, what about Tanev? Is he any closer? And you could just see, like, Green, the eyes light up. And I don't know if he's in his room when he's not having these meetings with players. Is he writing material or if somebody's writing material for him now? But he says, yeah, there's an update. He's a day closer than he was when you asked me that question yesterday. And then he started cackling. And he just, like, he thought it was the funniest thing that he had come up with all year. And, I mean, there was an element of humor to it. I didn't find it quite as amusing as he did. But there's still been a few of the giggle fits along the way from Travis Green.
He is, I think, like, he does seem different on the road. He does, like, these laughing fits, I don't see them at home, and the cameras are out there, the seats, those empty red seats are in front of them. I don't see him often breaking into laughter, but he seems to do this all the time on the road.
Right. It's not as formal for people that don't know. I mean, you know, at Rogers Arena, they're behind a podium, the seats, as you said, here on the road, it's always just a scrum, and it's usually a handful of us and rarely a camera. Even Canucks TV, they don't seem to want to shoot these pregame scrums. I guess they don't feel there's value in that, but again, I think he's been pretty good and pretty open and candid in that availability. So, when there's no cameras around, there's nothing to document his behavior, and maybe he feels that he's got more of a license to, you know, kind of laugh it up and yuck it up with us. Whatever the case, it is. He's different on the road than he is at home, and he's different right now because it's all smiles. They're having a good time, and they should be. Like, this road record, it really is crazy. And I pointed out last night, like, they didn't win their eighth road game until February 12th last year. Like, we're just past November 12th, a week or, you know, like 3 months. They're 3 months ahead of where they were out on the road last year, where they basically just threw games away. And right now, they've kind of got this swagger as they roll into some of these buildings. And that's why I think it's going to be so much fun. You know, Madison Square on Sunday, the Brock Besser tour continues. I got to think that there are some media people here in, like, the New York area that they want a piece of Besser. They want to see if this guy's for real, what he's all about. So I'm expecting that we'll see, you know, Brock Besser get some pretty big attention here as he works his way through the New York area. And, you know, even Tuesday, the Islanders, you know, generally not a marquee matchup, but you got Matt Barzal in that game. Like, you got Besser and Barzal going head-to-head. Like, sign me up. I'll take that on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and I've been, like, exchanging texts with some media members out east, and basically what I've been telling them is I don't think the East, Eastern media, Eastern hockey fans, I don't think they fully realize how good Besser has been. And I heard, you probably didn't see the broadcast, but this came up last night when they were talking about, you know, who's the front runner for the Calder. And I don't think anyone picked Besser. And one of the things McLean said was, well, he's playing with one of the best players in hockey, Bo Horvat, to which I thought, like, okay, like, you can't. I love Bo Horvat. I think the world of Bo Horvat. He is not, Doug, one of the best players in hockey. I'm sorry. And here he is leading all rookies in points. He's leading all rookies in goals. He's carried one of the worst offenses in hockey, one of the worst power plays in hockey. There haven't been a lot of changes, right? I mean, they've added, you know, Vanek has had an impact. But other than that, like, the Sedins are way down in their point totals, and they're really being carried offensively by Brock Besser. Like, legitimately, he's been the Canucks' best forward. The goalies have had, like, the Canucks are the second best team in hockey, and even strength save percentage. Like, the goalies, that collection of both those guys have been pretty much lights out. Like, you can't do much better than a 936 even strength save percentage. And they're pulling that off right now. I'm not sure that's sustainable. And when you talk about where this team is going to run into problems and where they might regress, I think that's one of the numbers that's going to fall at some point. But Besser has been the best story on the team. He's been the best player on the team. And And I was worried, how are they going to survive with Chris Tanev? Well, the answer, they're going to survive Chris Tanev because Brock Besser is going to go bonkers. Like, Brock Besser is going to go ham. And he's been going ham lately, scoring these goals. And I'm not sure the reaction that you're seeing out there out east. But I, when I was watching Sportsnet last night and they were talking about the Calder race, I just got the feeling that Besser is not getting the love right now he deserves because he's been the straw that stirs this drink.
All right. Another aside here, for people that listen and, you know, engage us on Twitter, a little different for you because, right now you're not on this road trip, but like I get these people that come at me on Twitter, you know, wanting my opinion about what's being said on the broadcast or, you know, this guy said like, I'm in the road rink. Like, I'm not watching the broadcast and even the home games. I'm there at the, like, I can't tell you. I didn't see it. I'm not watching. I don't have a monitor. So help me out here. Just, you know, spare me the questions about the, and what channel that I hate of all the questions I get. I'm a radio guy. I don't, like, I'm not the TV repairman. I don't know what channel it's, I don't know what cable system you've got. So don't ask me what channel the damn hockey game is on. As for Besser, I was thinking to myself too last night, like, you're Brendan Gaunce. It's now 81 games without a goal, which is incredible. Botch, like, if you're Brendan Gaunce and he's working on the, like, the Movember, he's got the mustache going, like, get rid, ditch the mustache, dye your hair blonde and grow it out and, like, buy 10 of those t-shirts. You, he's a left-handed shot. Use one of Besser's sticks. I don't know. Like, if I'm Brendan Gaunce, I'm doing everything to emulate Brock Besser right now.
How? Like, I look like it. It's great, and the Canucks are winning, and all of that. And it's hard to bring up, you know, stuff like this. But I look last night, and Gaunce is playing 18 minutes. Like, what the fuck? And Vertanen's down at Vertanen can't get to 10. He's at 8 minutes in a game that they were virtually in control of all the way through. Bertanen's playing 8 minutes and Gaunce 18. And I get, like, Gaunce, yeah, he's on the shutdown line, but, and, you know, Green loves his matchups, but come on. Like, I just don't understand for the life of me why he, like, for sure, Bertanen is held to a different standard than anyone else on this team, and I'm uncomfortable with the way, and people don't like when we all point out, like, how the Vertanen time on ice thing, but talk about responses on social media, but I just can't get over the disparity between Gaunce, who hasn't scored in 81-82 games, 18 minutes a game, freaking Vertanen down at 8, like, you've got, like, one of Green's biggest jobs this season is to develop Vertanen. And I just remain unconvinced. I know the other day I asked him about this, and he said, don't worry, 10 minutes a game is just fine to develop Vertanen. I'm sorry, man. I don't believe you. Like, I see a 220-pound guy who can skate like that, who can shoot like that, and Green has done a lot of really good things, and I've got a lot of time for his relationship with Vertanen last year, how he's brought him along, and how he looked in preseason. But I just feel like you're just like – You're throttling him down to a point where you're losing him. Like, you can't just say, well, you know, don't worry, guys. He's not going to peak until he's 24 years old. Well, if he's not going to peak until he's 24 years old, get him down in the minor leagues when he can start working on that shot, start using his speed. Because I couldn't care less about how many guys he hits, man. Like, the biggest problem for this team has been goals. They need goal scoring. The hits will be there. Trust me. When Vertanen is going and he's good, like, the hits will be there. You don't have to refine your hitting technique. What he has to do is refine his shooting, refine his skill, figure out where to go to score goals. And you're just never going to get there playing him 8-9 minutes a game, J-Pat. And I honestly, when I look at this season, I don't see it changing. Like, he said, like, well, you know, as long as he's not playing special teams, he's not going to play much more than 10 minutes. He's not playing special teams. You may give them a shift here and there, and then maybe there's injuries that'll get him to that spot. But right now, there's a long line of guys, you know, including Marcus Gramlin ahead of him, that are going to get time on special teams that he's not. And if it's going to be 10 minutes a game, get him on the line with Goldobin and have that line cook in the NHL, because I just don't see it with 10 mins.
Yeah, and I thought he was good in Philadelphia. I mean, he makes the play that starts the Daniel goal, which was a huge goal because Philadelphia was pouring it on. They opened the scoring. Canucks respond, and then they get a second one, the Besser goal, to put them in front, and they didn't look back from there. But, you know, Vertanen wins a puck battle on the sideboards in his own zone, frees the puck, gets it to Henrik, who pokes it on to Daniel. And I liked a lot of what Jake Vertanen did in Philadelphia. Last night in Pittsburgh, third period, they got into some penalty problems. And again, I didn't expect to see him a whole lot. But, you know, once they kind of weather the storm and it's 4-2 with, 5 minutes to go, even with a two-goal lead. Like, if it's a one-goal lead, I get it. A two-goal lead, you can't extend the bench at all. Vertanen is essentially a two-period player, and I don't know, when that's going to change. I'm not sure that it is going to change. You know, he gets some shifts in the first and second, and then he has to know going to third periods that, if they're behind, he's not going to play much, and if they've got the lead, apparently he's not going to play much either. So I did wonder, news of this week, the Eric Dorsett thing. We haven't talked about that. Last week we were talking about Dorsett and the fight. Obviously, the storyline has changed here. But I thought with Dorsett going out that, maybe that opened a door for Jake to use his skill set. And again, I'm with you on the hitting thing. Like, that got just so crazy there last week when it was just, like, so hyper-focused about the hits. But, they lose Dorsett for the foreseeable future here. They're not a particularly tough team to play against in the physical department. Gudbranson could be out now as well. Like, I do worry a little bit about Brock Besser. If you've got Dorsett out of your lineup and now Gudbranson may be hurt as well, like, if some team decides that the way to stop Brock Besser is to, hog tie him and tackle him and those types of things, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of pushback from the guys wearing Canuck colors.
Yeah, and to go back briefly to that hitting thing, I know that Green tried to walk it all back. I honestly it was you and Kuz on the road, kind of questioning, taking Vertanen, and he gave it to you guys. Like, it's not like you guys said, have you been told to hit? Like, he outlined not only that he was told to hit, he said specifically that Green sat down with him and told him you could get a hit on every shift. And now he's aiming for 2-3 hits a period. And I know afterwards, when we asked him about it last week, that Green tried to walk it all back. But I'm telling you, like, Vertanen, he's just not a guy that's going to pull things out of the air. He's going to tell you, he's a pretty straightforward guy, and he's going to tell you what the coach told him, unless he's trying to, cover up for something. And he was being exactly honest. And it was funny that Saturday against the Blues, when he did get caught chasing a hit, he lost his guy who was on the point, guy opened up, and that guy scored. I don't want Vertanen. You know what I don't want? I don't want Vertanen thinking. I don't want him, every single time when we said to him in the preseason, like, what's the difference? His answer was always, I'm not thinking out there. I'm just doing shit. I just want Vertanen doing shit. That's it. Just doing shit. I don't want him thinking about hitting people, man. Like, don't. Like, meet with him all you want, but just don't cloud his thing with, go out and get hits. Tell him to be more physical. Okay, I'm fine with that. To be more on an edge, I'm okay with that. But don't tell him to be more, because the other thing that he told me that I kind of was that the Canadiens don't really want him on the cycle. Like, they don't want him around the board cycling. So now he's in the offensive zone, right? He's got to think, oh, man, I got to hit guys. Also, oh, man, I can't be on the cycle. I got to find open spots in front of the net. And it's funny because I've seen people respond to me that, Jake doesn't know how to cycle with the Twins. They don't want him cycling. They want him to find open spots in front of the net on the backdoor play. And they want to try to be able to find them. But even the Canadiens haven't been able to get any kind of rhythm playing with them. Is, as you call him, he's a two-period player. And it's not just if the Canucks have a lead or they're behind. If they have a three-goal lead, he's still not fucking playing in the game. So, like, when is he ever going to play? It's just not going to happen. And the suggestion I take from that is Green doesn't think that he's an NHL player right now. And if he's not a full-time NHL player that can play three periods, bake him in the AHL and make him one.
On Dorsett, I mean, in what area, if any, do you think this is a loss for the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, I think that
I ultimately, it's the story that matters, right? Like, yeah. You know, I just, my heart stops when I'm hearing about his fingers tingling. And I think, you know, I saw that IMAC tweeted out and talked about Jim Benning responding to that and saying, you know what, it's not the same numbness that he had before the surgery. I would suggest to Jim that he let the doctors, like, he wanted to go home and he wanted to get checked out. And I kind of got into this in one of the probies that, like, this is a guy who his team means everything to him, right? Like, when he's on the ice, he gives it. You may not like Derek Dorsett as a player and what he accomplishes and whether he, you know, controls possession or not, but you cannot deny he spills his guts on the ice every single time. He stands up to every guy that's 6 foot six, 6 foot four, no matter how much more they weigh from him. He takes on all comers. He gives it everything he has. You can never, no one can ever deny that. And so when he says, I'm worried, I want to go home, I have an oh shit moment, because that's got to be pretty serious for him to be doing that. And I don't think any general manager or anyone involved in the team should downplay what it may mean. Because as we know now, knowing his story over the course of that recovery, he was worried beyond, you know, whether his hockey career might come to an end. He was worried whether, you know, he'd be able to pick up his kids, like little things that we take for granted in life. He was worried about. So ultimately, I'm concerned about Derek Dorsett, the person, and I'll wait. You know, I feel awkward, like even Chris saying, you know, they're not going to miss him. He's been drowning on the ice, because the most important thing to me is his health. I love his story. You know, I think it's a great story, a phenomenal story. I'm all about his story. I think that the coach played him too much. And I'm not saying that that led to the injury. I'm just saying that in right. general, for the team to succeed, Dorsett and Sutter can't be leading your team in ice. And I think it's, you know, it will catch up to them over time. And I think that Green a little bit got caught up in the success that Dorsett had scoring goals early in the season, 7 goals. So you're thinking, yeah, you know what, this is working. And you continue to throw them out there 15 minutes a game. I don't think anyone can win with, you know, 30-year-old Derek Dorsett playing more than 12, 13. Like, it's the most he'd been playing, like, since in 4 or 5 years. It's just was too much. So will the Canucks miss him? They'll miss his spirit. You know, they'll miss him in the room, all of those things. I don't think that they're going to miss him playing 15 minutes a game, though.
No, because they've got Brendan Gaunce to do that now. But and, you know, that's a good question. I'm not sure if he hits. He's been shooting the puck a little more than in the past, so maybe there's a goal coming. Who knows? But well said on Dorsett. And I will say this, like, in the immediate aftermath of the announcement by the Canucks, like, I just saw so much hot garbage out in social media. You know, good. Can he take Sutter with him? Can he take Benning with him? Can he take good Brandt? You know, and it's just like, I couldn't help myself, but I was like, guys, like, this is a guy's life we're talking about here and his career, and he's got small kids and all that kind of stuff, and he's got a lot of life to live. So, you know, for me right now, it's just hopefully this guy can get healthy. I'm with you. Like, the fact that he left the hockey club so quickly and didn't, you know, want to just wait it out and maybe take a day or two, take a night off and see if it got better. The fact that he was on one of the first flights back to Vancouver and then down to Los Angeles to see the surgeon that did the work a year ago, you know, that tells me that he was experiencing things that obviously concerned him. So we'll see where it goes. I haven't had an update. Maybe get one tomorrow at the rink. Want to finish up with this. And again, this kind of comes full circle. That, and this has been an issue the last couple of days, and I know you've talked about it on the radio, but Botch, the general manager's future and his contract is starting to bubble to the surface. Other times, like, this would be the story of the season, and yet you and I have basically talked for an hour about the Vancouver Canucks, most of it about Brock Besser, and we haven't even got to Jim Benning and his future, but that tells you kind of where we are right now in Brock mania, and the fact that, like, they're really, like, there's his story, and then there's these other stories about the hockey club that are over there, and the Benning thing's going to grow until it's resolved, obviously, but what's your sense on, you know, where things stand and where they go for the general manager?
Well, I think one guy has been in this position, one general manager has been in this position and ended up with a contract extension, and that was Trevelyan in Calgary. And other than that, generally, guys that are in this spot don't get re-signed. And I think that, you know, if I had to guess, that would be my lean as to which way it was going. I've been led to believe that there's some kind of disagreement somewhere between ownership and Trevor, and I'm not sure whose side is on whose side. But you better believe if he doesn't have a contract extension, there are reasons for it, and they're not entirely sold that this is the guy to move forward. And I think that there are some questions that none of us have a feel for, one of which is, you know, Patterson was a great pick. Who exactly, like, where did that come from? Because we were told heading into that draft, Judd Brackett would have more influence over the draft. I think it was a draft that went in a different way than previous drafts. I think Lyndon even talked about afterwards how, you know, analytics had a bigger role, data had a bigger role than the guys that they picked. That doesn't, you know, doesn't scream Jim Benning to me. So I think that, you know, they'll have to decide, you know, behind the scenes, they'll be making the decisions on, you know, which calls were Jim's, which calls were Trevor's, which calls were Judd Brackett's, and all of that will have influence over, you know, whether he comes back. One of the things that has been, you know, bubbling in the background has been this idea that if they do move on from Jim, they're going to want a name. It's going to be a Holland type, an Armstrong type. A guy that has some kind of sway that's going to come into the market and to the general fan base is going to collectively say, yeah, you know, this is, I have faith in him. I have trust in him. Remember when Gillis was fired, one of the big things that that Aquilini talked about was that how the public and how we kind of had lost the trust in the public. And if the attendance issues aren't remedied in the second half of the season, I could see them thinking the same kind of way. But, you know, I'm not sure, like, you know, Brock Besser, is that a game changer? Maybe, you know, he's certainly been phenomenal. It's certainly looking like a terrific pick. That seems to be a Jim pick for sure, to me. And, does that change anything? Well, you know, Canucks are playing the New York Islanders on this trip, right? They got Tavares. How much difference has Tavares made? Like, one player doesn't make all the difference in the world. Like, I see people mapping out how will the Canucks look in 2 or 3 years when they have Patterson, when they have Dallin. Like, that's a game the Oilers and their fans, their media played for years, man. Right. Like, I remember 2011, 2012, when they had Eberle and Hall and Gagne and Pajarvi, and, like, there was, like, a long list, or 6 or 7 guys, and young guys, and they weren't up and cut. Like, they were guys that were having an impact in the NHL, and the Oilers were like, holy shit, like, look at this lineup, and we're going to dominate, we're on our way. And it didn't work out. Like, you can have several really good prospects. It's no sure thing that you can map out and say, oh, well, when Pedersen's here and Dallin's here, the Canucks are going to take over the world. There's a lot more to it than that. You need a lot more hits than one, and the Canucks are going to have to look at Vertanen over the other guys who were there. Like, that was a Jim pick for sure. Joel Levy, on that one, Jim locked in from January on. He was going to get Joel Levy. And you look at Keller right now, like, potentially Keller and Besser could be on a line together instead of arguing, you know, who's the best guy. So I think that Jim has some wins for sure. I'm not going to take that away from him. But he has some losses, some L's. And Gudbranson is a big one. That 2016 offseason, like, I look at, you know, if they don't go back to re-signing Benning and don't give him the extension, what's going to bring him down? And I think the plays he made in 2016, when the kind of last grasp, and he even admitted this, by the way, he admitted this at the deadline the last year, where he said, I tried to give the Sedins one last shot and it didn't work. He was totally upfront about that in that trade deadline when he was all on fire, his hair was on fire, and he pulled off the great trades, and he got Goldobin and he got Dallin, and fantastic. But he said then, like, look, I tried to give that one last gasp to that core, and it didn't work. And part of giving that core one last gasp was signing Louis Erickson. That's going to hurt no matter how well he's playing. It's going to hurt. He's not going to be worth $6 million, certainly not over 6 years. And the Gudbranson trade, which is for sure, without question, the worst on his docket, because he gives up a first-round talent, McCann, and that pick at the top of the second round. And there was a lot of really good players who went the top of that second round.
You had me thinking there when you mentioned the game that Oilers fans and the media there in Edmonton played for long. Like, I was guilty of that. You remember, like, before McDavid, there was these questions. Like, I think we even did poll questions on the radio. Like, who's got the better young core, the Avalanche or the Oilers? And
that's another one, right? Look at all the young talent the Avs right. had. And everyone thought, you know, and they had that great year, and everyone thought, oh, these are the next guys. Like, man, it takes a lot of building. It's not just Besser. Even if Pettersson shows, like, some of these guys aren't going to work out, but even if, you know, Pettersson's great, Dallin's great, Besser's great, like, Colorado had that.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't enough.
The other thing, like, what am I missing here? And I'm not knocking you, but you mentioned Doug Armstrong. Like, the St. Louis Blues are leading the conference. Like, what more? Like, I mean, he has to have playoff success. Like, to me, he seems like a pretty shrewd guy that's been around, has some experience, has built some teams. Like, I'm surprised that he's not a little further along with the Blues in terms of getting an extension there.
Well, you know, the knock on the Blues is that they haven't been, they're kind of where the Canucks,
right.
you know, where they haven't been able to break through. So, I mean, I think they'd be fine, and they should keep him. But he's one of the guys, one of the four or five guys that the general managers in the league, Fletcher, they're in these lame duck situations where it appears, I'm going to read into it that if you're a general manager in the last year of your contract and you're not signed, there's reasons for it. Either the team, like Burke back in the day, the Canucks knew he was moving on. Everyone knew that they were going to go to Nonis, and it was just that's the way that they were going to go. So either you know that you're already moving on, or the team's success and playoff success in terms of points and in terms of rounds is going to determine whether you get that extension or not.
All right, you're missing out, man. Six nights in New York City here. The games are spaced out beautifully. But as I said right off the top, you've got time to jump on the red eye, get to Jersey, fly right into Newark. It's like a train stop away. You could be at Prudential Center to see the Flow in person, as hot as he has ever been in the National Hockey League. And again, the countdown for me is on because I can't wait to see what Brock Besser is going to do next. But, you know, look, we've been on this beat for a while. Let's be honest. We try to have fun doing the podcast, but there haven't been many nights that have been a lot of fun for the Vancouver Canucks in the last couple of years. So I have to say that it's been a refreshing change, and it is kind of cool to go to the rink thinking that maybe, just maybe, you're going to see something special. And that's been the case here the last week or so with Brock Besser and this power play that's reemerged, and some good stories on this hockey club. So we'll reconvene. We'll do this again next week as the road trip continues. Maybe check in from Nashville before that final stop. But hopefully Canuck fans are enjoying this again. He's not going to score two.
But hold on, you're in New York?
Yes.
Six nights.
Yeah.
One city. Like, this is the greatest. I think it's among the greatest trips that I've ever heard of. Like, six nights in New York City is pretty amazing. Are you hooking up with Coos and iMac and going out maybe for a chef's tasting, a Broadway show? Are you guys going to be up on the Empire State Building? Like, collectively, as a group, what do you guys have in the works, or are you going to be doing things on your own?
Well, I'm going to freewheel a little bit because, as you know, and as I documented on the podcast late last season, when the season was over, in fact, the day after the season was over, brought my wife to New York for the first time, and we did the Broadway things. Like, we did all the touristy stuff for as much as we could. Like, we crammed a lot. No kids, so we just crammed, you know, 4 days of New York City. We kind of binged on this city, and we did a lot, and that was April. So I'm thrilled to be back here. I mean, it really is an amazing city. But I'm going to kind of freewheel. I got a couple of things that I want to do. I will see Coos and Ian at the rink, whether I see them outside the rink. I may run into Murph or Shorty somewhere along the line as well. No, I mean, I really don't have a game plan this time around. There are game days, and then there's a couple of down days. So it's New York. I won't have any problem finding things to do of that, I'm certain. And we catch a huge break again, just like that other Eastern trip. Weather's spectacular, like sunshine. I brought all this like heavy winter wear and basically have left it parked because it hasn't been cold. So again, that's a good balance for, a soft guy like me that doesn't like the cold weather. I'm sure we'll see it in Winnipeg and Minnesota. And there's that trip in January that I think you're on, the Washington, Columbus, Montreal, like that's going to be cold weather. digging what the forecast has in store for us here for a week, six nights in New York City. PatCast is always brought to you by Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everybody's a part of their hockey family. We always say if you're in the market for a vehicle, if you're just starting your search, check them out online, eagleridgegm.com, and take it from there. We also say, as much as we appreciate the feedback and the response that we get, you know, let's harness the power of social media and share the podcast. Retweet it if you can when we send out the links. Get as many people on board as possible because we have fun doing it, and hopefully people are enjoying it as well. Botch, enjoy the Brock Besser Show from afar, and we'll catch up with you down the road next week.
Okay.
There you go. Jason Botch, we're back in Vancouver. Jeff Patterson here in New York. That is another PatCast on Province Radio.